You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Barbara Wright. Barbara, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Barbara, we have been talking and emailing for several years about the work that you're doing, trying to get the United States Central Intelligence Agency to admit that there was a unit in Korea known as the Ghost Walkers. And you just sent me recently a Freedom of Information Act request response, which I'd like to go over, and to find out exactly everything about this matter. But before we do that, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are and how you got to this point of researching this issue?
Well, I was born and raised in Pendleton, Oregon. My parents were both World War II vets. My stepfather was a former National Chef de Garde, the 48th, in the state of Oregon. And I had grown up with knowing about records and this, that, and the other in the military from the time I can remember. And in 2001, Joe Dunnigan and I got together. And it was one of those affairs where when we got kind of really good friends, he told me that he had a back injury. And I said, well, are you getting compensation for it? And he said, no. And I said, you're supposed to be getting compensation. Well, Joe and I eventually went out to the county service office in 2001, and we filed a claim for his back injury. I always made the assumption, like a lot of other people do, that you file a claim, and if you don't have all your service records, they're sitting in a central repository, and it's granted. I was sorely mistaken. What came were nothing to do with Joe's service records to do with Korea. All it talked about was what he'd done in the reserves. Well, I'm a trained journalist. I went to college. I took journalism in college. I used to write for the college newspaper, so I began asking him questions. And eventually, he tells me, when I ask him, because I wanted to go after a unit roster, that his unit was, they called them Ghost Walkers. And I said, well, yeah, like Screaming Eagles and Warthogs and whatever. What's the number? You know, you have to have a number. You were attached to somebody. And he said all they told him was HQ, HQ, Seoul. And I went, that don't sound right, but whatever, I'm not going to argue with you. So that's when I set out to try to find out what was going on with Ghost Walkers. And my friend Tora King, who many of your listeners will know from the Hobbs decision and several others, said to me, wear no shoulder patches, you carry no ID, you're Army Intel CIA. So the first time I queried the CIA was 2004, and they sent me back this lovely little response that says, we don't have anything, thank you very much. Well, I knew that that was not the case, or shouldn't have been the case, because, again, Tora kept saying, Barb, they've got the records, or they know where they're at. And so I again queried them, I think, in 2006, and I didn't get anything. So our representative in 2009 asked. They gave him the same answer they gave me. So in 2010, SOCOM was formed, December, I think, of 2010. And so I turned the issue over to Noel Hike at SOCOM. Again, Noel ran into the same brick wall as I had. He knew that Joe was there, but he couldn't find the records. And the CIA, they wouldn't tell him anything. And so it's just been a quest, Dave, because I know that my husband's eligible for benefits. I know that what they asked him to do in Korea was exceptionally dangerous and that he's entitled to the benefits that we're seeking. So I've continued to just kind of plod along and ask and whatever. But in the last month, I went down to Portland. Our senator, Jeff Merkley, his new vet rep was a second lieutenant in Korea in 1980. Kelly said to me, Miss Wright, she said, I'm confident in my own mind knowing what went on in Korea and how screwy things were over there then, that your husband was there. But we can't get the records. She said her CIA contacts had said, send a FOIA request to the CIA. Well, Joe said, I don't think that'll do any good. We've sent others, and they've said, kiss my ass. And I said, well, I'm going to do what Kelly told me to do, just so that she can't come back and say, did you do what I asked you to do? And he didn't think that that was a very smart idea, but it did it anyway. And lo and behold, yesterday, the envelope came, and I smartly said to Joe when I got in the pickup, I said, well, I know what it says. I don't have to look. And he said, well, yeah, but go ahead and look just for my curiosity, would you? So he handed me the letter opener, and I opened it, and that's where we get the Glomar letter. I had sent a separate request for his confirmation of his service in the unit. I didn't send it in the initial FOIA for confirmation that the unit existed, because I thought to myself, well, I've asked for confirmation that he worked for the CIA all this time, and they've never acknowledged that, so I'm going to try another tack. And so this was the other tack. I asked for the records for the unit, and this is what came, confirmation that the unit existed, and indeed, this is what came back. The other FOIA has not come back yet. I mailed them the same day, so I have no idea if it's in the mail and I'll receive it today, or if it'll be a few days longer while they figure out what they're going to do, because I did not ask them for copies of his records. I asked them for confirmation of service. This is how clandestine the unit is. When those guys went to Korea, and there was 1,800 that left Fort Lewis 1 o'clock in the morning on the 6th of May, I think, 1962, out of McCord, they left their own names, their own military ID numbers, all that jazz was left at Fort Lewis in their stuff that was sent home. So what we have is a unit of guys that went to Korea under names that his code name was Skinny. I find just very recently, David, that they even said to him, you can't use your military ID number. Here's what you're going to use for a military ID number if somebody asks you for your ID. And when I said to him, is that phony ID number they gave you, is this what it is? And he goes, yeah, have you figured it out? And I looked at him and I said, it's not rocket science, Dad. And he said, what do you mean? I said, look at it and think a minute. Think really hard. And he goes, what am I thinking about? Dissect your birth date, dear. That's how you figured that son of a bitch out? I hadn't thought about that for 50 years. And I said, yeah, hello. That's the phony ID. 03-311-1939. And he says, oh, I hadn't thought of that for 50 years until you brought it up. And I said, well, it came to me in the middle of the night. And he laughed and he said, well, it was a good time, I guess. So that's what's in the other FOIA. His Skinny with the fake military ID plus his actual name with his real military ID. So I don't know what they're going to come up with. I don't know if it's because Kelly's connections decided that they needed to be forthcoming finally, or it's the economic climate in Washington, D.C., or I have no clue. I have no idea why all of a sudden they're being forthcoming, but they are, and I've at least proved that the unit existed, which I knew it did because somebody else had told me about it and told me that the guys were apparently pretty secretive. When they came to his unit, they didn't do any talking at all. They went into a meeting room and waited for the big shots to show up and talked with the big shots and then left. And so little by little, I'm piecing together what's going on with this unit. And I have no idea what the CIA is going to say. It would be nice if they just said, pay the man and give him a gag order so that Joe could live out the rest of his senior years with some economic security, because he's never had that. He was never able to go to school on the GI Bill because he doesn't have a discharge for Korea. When he was injured at Fort Lewis after he fell off of a dish and a half unloading ammunition boxes getting ready for the Vietnam War, they shipped him out of the military and the hospital just about as quick as they could get him out. They thought he could be discharged. He was gone. And so he's lived all these years with no discharge, not being able to use his VA home loan because he could never prove that he was through his military service. So it's just like, you know, guys, this is enough is enough. It's time to compensate him for what he did and for the other ghost walkers. None of them can prove they were ever doing what they said they were doing. One ghost walker that I've talked to since I talked to you the last time, I think, if you look at his 201 file, it says that he was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean aboard ship. Well, that would be fine, except we never shipped Agent Orange that direction, and he has illnesses consistent with Agent Orange exposure. That Marine has some real health issues. It's not just for my Joe, but it's for all the guys that were involved in this unit, and they were involved. It was like they weren't told what they were going to do, like with Joe, they offered him a 2-year tour on active duty. In the middle of March in Bend, Oregon, there's no work, and his parents expected him to be able to work. His dad had been transferred to Bend with Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles as a license examiner. So Joe moved with his folks to Bend, and it was middle of March, no work, and he gets this letter from the government that says, we have a 2-year tour on active duty we'd like to discuss with you. Here's bus tickets, here's this, that, and the other. Please come to Fort Willis. So he goes to Fort Willis, and that starts the odyssey. 2 years on active duty, and can't tell your mom where you are, can't tell your dad where you are, can't tell your brothers or sisters where you are. When you ride home, you have to say that the weather's fine, we're out on maneuvers at Fort Willis, doing our thing, everything's cool, miss you, see ya. And it was pretty hard. His mother went to her grave, not knowing what Joe did for 20 months after his dad died. His family has no idea. His two living sisters have no more idea than the man in the moon what Joe did. And it would be just nice to be able to say to his sisters, your brother was a hero.
Yes, absolutely.
At the same time as this was going on, the Agent Orange Korea CD was being put together by Tora King. And somebody suggested that I get a hold of Tora. I did, and got on the mailing list. And Tora told me at the time, anytime you've got somebody that doesn't have any ID, doesn't wear any shoulder patches, that's Army Intel, CIA, because she'd gotten her father's claim approved out of Clark Air Force Base, the Philippines, and she'd met some Nicky Peep guys, as she called them. So she kind of knew what she was talking about. So that's kind of where I knew something funny was going on the first time. And then I kind of knew Joe was the real deal when I posted a query in the VFW magazine. I was looking for information about an incident that happened at O.P. Susan in November of 1962. Well, I don't think the gizmo had been out more than 24 hours when I got a phone call from a guy in Texas. He says, I was there. Yeah, it happened about 6 o'clock in the morning. So then I knew that, because Joe had told me it was daylight. They were just coming in off of a mission when they were told by their lieutenant that instead of going home and cleaning up and having a speck of breakfast and going to bed, they had to go out and find these guys that had just ambushed O.P. Susan. And I said, well, what time was it? Well, he said, we come in off of maneuvers at like 6 o'clock in the morning probably. So it was about that time. Well, it totally went along with what Eric had said. And so that's when it kind of started. I knew then that it was pretty much the real deal. But, of course, we need to have it official. We can't just say, yeah, we know that it's the real deal and go on from there, because the VA doesn't believe you when you say, oh, yeah, it's the real deal. This is why this was done. This email or this FOIA was sent was to start the process of being able to say, look, we know that the unit existed. Where's the record? And I will not stop, because Joe's not the only one. I will not stop until such time as we have the records in hand and all the guys that were put in this unit get their benefits. Because none of them are well. All of them have issues consistent with either herbicide exposure, or they got hurt somehow, or something like that. And so it's a matter of, okay, it's pretty easy just to flush them down the wormhole and say to the sea, don't want to be you. But I said, no, that's not fair to the guys.
How many FOIAs or other requests for information do you figure you have sent out?
Over a dozen, probably close to two by now. I FOIA'd everybody. We're talking CIA, NSA, DOD, INSCOM, and INSCOM knew about the unit. Joe's sure of that, because they called one morning about 7 o'clock. He wasn't even up. I woke him up to talk to INSCOM, and he knows that they knew about the unit just from the way they talked. Because remember, Dave, he's military police. He was trained at Fort Gordon, Georgia as a military policeman. And I surmise that he was fairly top of his class. So he's real versed in interrogation. And the questions the gentleman was asking and the way he was answering the questions, Joe is relatively sure that they know all about the unit and have just been instructed probably to keep their mouth shut.
Has Joe ever talked to you about the mission?
Oh, yes, I know some of the stuff he did. It would scare the pants right off of you if you knew some of the stuff that they had those guys do. 99% of it's still classified, especially in the era of today with the problems we've got going on with North Korea. It's very much counterintelligence, counterinsurgency. at the time that this unit was initially formed, there was a lot of problems going on in Korea. North Koreans were coming south. They were doing any kind of unsavory thing you can think of, from just going into a village and stealing food, raping the women, and then leaving under the cover of darkness. I'm sure that's the reason why the South Korean government came to the 8th Army Korea and said, hey, we need some help, because they were having all these kind of problems. And when the guys talk about the things that they were asked to do, they were out at night, they were looking for infiltrators. If they caught them initially, they were to turn them around and send them back. Well, that lasted all of about 60 days, and they decided that that wasn't a good thing to do after they intercepted the same bunch three times in a week. They just come down a different area than what they'd come down the first time, but it was the same bunch, so they came up with a different way to stop them. If it was an officer, they'd take the officer into custody and take him into Asylum City for interrogation. The others, they turned over to the rooks to take care of, and I have no idea what happened to them. I know the things that they were asked to do were very dangerous. Joe has a scar on his chest from where a North Korean attempted to stab him. Had it not been for one of the Turks that was working with the Ghost Walkers unit, I'm afraid that Joe would have been probably killed. From the looks of the scar and the place of the scar, I would say that if they had gotten the job done, what they wanted to do, he would probably have punctured his heart and he would have bled to death. The way it was, he had an alley that he had to deal with for a couple weeks or whatever.
Online, there's very little about what we're talking about, which means that there has been no media coverage about this. Am I correct?
You got that right, and that's what I'm trying to do, is to get the media coverage on it. I've gone to OPB. I've gone to my local NBC station. OPB initially was interested as soon as they got an investigative reporter, and they've got one of those now, but something's happened, and they've backed water on wanting to do anything. And so it's a matter of, okay, you guys want to play that kind of game, I'll do whatever I have to do to get it out in the press so that people understand that, as I often say, freedom is free. It was brought to you by a vet. Thank him. Be gracious enough to say to the guy, look, we can't divulge what you did, but we can pay you for your service.
There is one thing online that I'm looking at. It says that Ghost Walkers and SEALs infiltrated a North Korean nuclear power plant in 1963. Have you heard about that?
Yep, I know all about that. They went up by submarine, I think. They had an idea where the power plant was. Army intel had said it was like 5 miles in from the beach. David, it wasn't 5 miles in from the beach. They went 5 miles in and there wasn't anything. It was like 15 miles or so inland was this nuclear power plant. And the SEALs and the Ghost Walkers were allowed in. Nobody said anything or did anything to keep them out. The doors were open. They just went in. They photographed the facility and then bebopped out back to the amphibious boats that brought them there and back out to sea and back on the boat that they came in on. And they went back and reported to Ascom City. The power plant was put in there by the Chinese and the Russians. Joe said it had Chinese and Russian writing on it, so it's legit. It was the first one that was built, and it was built up around the capital city so that the current gentleman's granddad would have electricity. And that's what I know about it. And Joe said that he knew that they had to know they were coming because they literally just threw the welcome mat out.
Did you hear anything about a North Korean general being abducted, interrogated, and executed by the United States?
That was done by the CIA. Yes, I know all about that. I know who got up the plan. I know when it was done. I pretty much know anything you need to know about it, because it was Joe that came up with the plan, and it was Joe that executed the plan. And when push comes to shove, he knows pretty much anything you need to know about the plan. And it was done because that particular general was causing more problems than cats have kittens around Korea, and 8th Army wanted him worse than anything. So Joe said, so how bad do you want him? We get him, can we have a 3-day pass? And they said, oh, hell, you can have whatever you want, but you can't get him. Well, as you will learn with my man, don't tell him no, tell him you wish he wouldn't, because he will find a way. And he did find a way. And the gentleman was picked up, he was taken to Ascom City, and if you want to know what happened to him, you need to ask the CIA, because they know where they buried him. I don't. He was taken back to Ascom City for interrogation, and according to what my man says, he was interrogated for 3 days about, and then the CIA decided to dispose of him, is what I've been told. And I said, do you know where they disposed of him at? And he said, nope, I just know that they wanted us to do it. And we said, no, you wanted him. It was your idea. You do it. And so apparently they did. That's what I know.
Do you think, Barbara, that this was the biggest operation that the Ghostwalkers were involved in?
I can't say, Dave, because I don't know all of the stuff that they did. But this was a pretty important one. This was a pretty dangerous one because they went up into North Korea. They took the gentleman out of his tent in the middle of the night. He had no clothes on. They picked him up. They carried him, I think, they said, over their shoulders about 15 miles because they knocked him out. One of the guys had a .45, and he hit him alongside the head and knocked him out. And they slung him over their shoulder like you do a sack of beans. And they took him about, I think Joe said, 15 miles. And then they took him to Ascom City. And by the time they got there, the North Koreans had figured out that he was gone, and they were hot on their trail. They got him to Ascom City, and 8th Army and 8th Army Tokyo interrogated him. And the boys got a 3-day pass going to Seoul for R&R. Father said that was pretty sweet.
Let's go over this document that you received just yesterday. Of course, it's from the Central Intelligence Agency, April 10th, not even a week ago. Dear Ms. Wright, this is a final response to your 1 March 2017 Freedom of Information Act FOIA request received in the Office of the Information and Privacy Coordinator on 31 March 2017 for records on a quick response unit that was formed by CIA in Korea in July of 1962. The only unit designation U, and that's in brackets, no, is HQ Seoul. This unit was known as Ghostwalkers out in the field, and they were known to be associated with the CIA. We have assigned your request the reference number above. Please use this number when corresponding so that we can identify it easily. In accordance with Section 3.6A of Executive Order 13526, the CIA can neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of records responsive to your request. The fact of the existence or non-existence of such records is itself currently and properly classified and is intelligence sources and methods information protected from disclosure by Section 6 of the CIA Act of 1949. And it goes on to talk about some other amendments to that section in the Act. Therefore, your request is denied pursuant to FOIA exemptions B1 and B3. I have a closing explanation of these exemptions for your reference and retention, and it goes on a little bit more. But that's basically the gist of it. You told me that their response then is proof that the unit existed. Explain to the listeners why that is.
That's what SOCOM tells me. They call those a Glomar letter. They won't say that they existed, and they won't say they didn't exist. Which Noel Hike said to me, that tells me that, yeah, they existed and they don't want to admit it or they can't admit it because it's classified. And indeed, if you look at that response, it pretty much tells you, yeah, the records are still classified. So that's why I figure that, yes, because they didn't dispute when I said formed in July of 62, or they didn't dispute that the name of the unit was Ghostwalkers. My mother would look at you and say, they know more than what they can say. That's all I'll say.
What you're saying is that if the unit, in fact, did not exist, and they would come out and just say, yeah, there was no such a unit that we know of.
That's what I'm saying.
And so you are expecting this other FOIA to come. Like you said, it might be in the mail now. Can we hook up again?
Sure.
When that
comes? As soon as that little sucker appears, I'll ship you a copy and we'll get back together because I'm not going to drop this. Like I said, there's too many other gentlemen that need benefits that were in this unit, whether it was 62 or 69 when Doug Hesse met the unit, or in 67 when Michelle Gatz said that she's working with was in the unit, or 68 when Sandy Meyer was in the unit, or whatever. Or when the unit changed names to Werewolf or Tarantula or whatever, those guys need benefits. And so I'm not going to stop until there's something, a protocol established whereby these guys are given the benefits that they earned. Because I'm just that way. I don't play keep away. If you're entitled to something, I want you to have it. And for years and years, I've always been told that our friends at the CIA, if they had something, God help you because they weren't going to share it. But I also know that what the mandatory declassification rules are, and that by now it's time. Those should have been declassified, and they should be out in open source. But I surmise that the unit is still in operations, and if that's the case, it's very possible that they can't let them out because they'll jeopardize the safety of the gentlemen that are in the unit now, and that's fine with me. Just come up with a protocol so that the guys that served in them in the 60s and early 70s, before SOCOM was established, get the benefits that they earned. Because all of you guys, whether it's Joe or yourself or Jane Doe, were made some promises when you enlisted in the military. And one of the promises that they made, if you get injured, we'll take care of you. If you get hurt and can't work, we'll provide you with compensation. If you want to buy a house, we'll provide you with money for acquiring a home. If you want to go to school, we've got an education program established that will provide you with funding for going to school. And none of the guys, if they needed to prove enough time to be able to acquire a VA home loan, could do it because that doesn't show up on their service records. Joe can tell you about that. If you needed to have educational benefits, you have to have a DD-214 that shows that you've completed your military career in terms of enlistment to do that, and Joe doesn't have that, and I surmise that some of the other gentlemen probably are sitting in the same situation as he is. And so there you sit, and you think to yourself, that's not fair, that's not right. That's the breach of the contract that they made with you when they talked you into entering into service with the military. So I'm not going to stop until this gets some kind of a resolution. And I'm hoping that possibly with the admin of Senate Bill 726 that declassifies records for vets that were exposed to toxic substances, that perhaps that will be a lever to say, okay, what about the other guys? What about the guys that were in Korea in one or another of the special ops units? Are you going to include them also? And they've assured me that that's going to happen. When I contacted the Armed Services Committee office and Moran's office, they assured me that it would include anybody that was exposed to toxic chemicals, and that includes guys that served in the military in Korea, because there's a lot of toxic substances that they were exposed to that DOD and the Department of the Army won't tell us about. So we'll see what happens, Dave.
Excellent. And of course, with what's happening with North Korea now, this could actually benefit you and your cause to help all these fellas, because they certainly don't want any of this information getting out with tensions as high as they are. And they haven't been this high, I don't think, with North Korea since the Korean War.
And the sad part about it, Dave, is we have guys who will sit there and say to you, they asked me to go pop his grandpa and I couldn't get the job done. And it's like, well, it's not your fault. Well, we wouldn't be in this situation if I'd have got the job done. And it's like, don't beat yourself up over it. You did the best you could. But again, they feel like that they should have been able to do something that would have prevented this from happening. So, yeah, it's hard.
Barbara Wright. Barbara, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And I'm looking forward to speaking to you again when you get that latest FOIA letter from the Central Intelligence Agency. Thanks so much, Barbara, and hope you have a happy Easter.
All righty, my dear. You have a great Easter, too, and we'll look forward to talking to you as soon as we know something.